Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Book of Boba Fett, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow Tusken Raiders for this enterprise. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerd. Dan, you know, you are such a great host. I have a gift for you.
Oh, no.
Lean back.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Yep. Lean back and think of Kamino.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Bonjour. And so my proposed title for this episode is The Saharan Snowpiercer.
Which also sounds like a cocktail, maybe.
Oh, man, it would be a really, yeah.
It's a sandy, snowy cocktail.
Is it served in one of those, like, brass cups, maybe?
Oh, yeah, like a julep cup.
I don't know enough about drinks.
It's one of those things where it, like, starts almost like a warhead. Like, it starts, like, icy but ends up hot, or vice versa. And there's, like, a little train that runs around the bottom of it.
The train is key, though. But you don't get the same taste without the train.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what has the spice.
Oh, and it's spiked. So, pike, spiked.
Oh, yeah. Spiked lemonade or something?
Yeah,
okay. I like what we're doing here. Well, we'll open up the call lines to the cocktail menu a little bit later in the show.
Dan, we are here to discuss. Podcasts have a signature beverage, so get on board.
I think we should have one. Maybe we should have one per episode.
I'm drinking a beer tonight, so that is a nice signature beverage.
I am drinking a root beer.
I'm drinking water.
We are here to discuss episode 2 of The Book of Boba Fett, entitled Chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine. Not a classic sci-fi book title this week.
That we know of.
Not one that I'm familiar with, at least.
It could be. Yeah. We just don't know. Or it's a book that hasn't been written yet. A classic sci-fi novel that does not yet exist, which either of you could write, or I could write, or we could team write.
The Book of Boba Fett. Tribes of Tatooine. Tribes of Tatooine.
Chapter 2.
We've all read a lot of bad Star Wars books.
They're all good.
Anyway, so we'll
especially Prince Xavier.
I'm going to do a super quick recap of this week's episode. So we start off with Boba Fett and Shand interrogating the assassin they captured last week. And after a variety of threats, they throw him in the Rancor pit, and he confesses the mayor sent them, but there's no Rancor. But it's pretty great. They go to visit the mayor. The mayor denies there was any assassin attempt and suggests that they basically go back to the Bar Sanctuary, where Fwip informs them that the twins, who are a pair of Jabba's cousins, want Jabba's throne or feel they are entitled to Jabba's throne. Good news. They show up immediately and threaten Boba Fett a whole bunch, but like in nice ways, the ways that like gangsters do between each other.
I will say the litter entrance does make an impression.
Yeah, it does. And they've got a Wookiee bounty hunter. I mean, that was one of my thoughts. It seems like Boba Fett walks a lot of places.
It's good. 10,000
steps. You know, well, because like they, but literally, for example, Fennec Shand walks that assassin back to his base.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, so she walks, and then they walk the assassin and the two Gamorrean guards. Like, I mean, I understand that, like, they're not all going to fit in, like, a compact car or speeder, but, like, it feels like
it's a long way to go.
Well, it makes you realize, question, like, how close is it to Mos Espa? Yeah. Because, like, if it's 15 miles, like, yeah, that's a long walk, but if it's just like, oh, yeah, it's just over
down
the next hill, man. It's really close.
So Fett, like, basically holds fast to his claim to Jabba's throne, and they go back to the palace, and then the rest of the episode is a continued flashback to his time among the Tusken Raiders.
To not see that coming.
Where he basically learns how to fight with a Gaffa stick. There's basically a train that comes through the area manned by the Pikes, who shoot a bunch of the Tusken Raiders. Boba Fett decides he's going to show them how to hijack the train, which they do in an extended action sequence. And capture the Pikes and tell them essentially that this land now belongs, you know, it continues to belong to the Tusken Raiders, and anybody who wants to use it has to pay a toll. He is made officially a member of the tribe and goes on sort of a psychedelic
lizard
trip
quest
inspired by a lizard.
Which is a little confusing to me because he is having a psychedelic trip
inside a flashback.
Inside his back to tank flashback?
Yeah, there's layers to this.
I've never had a back to tank experience, so maybe this is how it works.
Have you had a? You didn't say whether or not you'd had a lizard induced like hallucination experience.
There are certain there are certain things about the Boy Scout experience that I'm sworn to secrecy about, Dan.
Ah, so. yes, that's why you are a lizard scout.
I do have the reptile and amphibian study badge. I think that's one of the first badges I earned. So all yeah.
All right. I will say, as a kid, Dan knows this, like I watched a lot of like very adult rated R movies as a child, exposed to lots of violence. It was just the movies I saw as a kid, right? And like I took it all in stride, and I think I turned out fine. But the one movie I always had, there are two scenes I've always had to turn my eyes away from. One is when they grab the heart out of in the Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones, and two, the one to this day that still quote unquote wigs me out is putting the ear in the Star Trek 2.
Yeah. No.
So the lizard scene immediately just made me like so uncomfortable and disgusted.
Cat. I saw Star Trek 2 when I was like very young, and I could not deal with it, and I did not watch it again until I think until about 5 years ago, like literally in my like late 30s, and I was like, oh, the special effects are so bad, but it lived in my mind for decades as this horrifying thing. And then thankfully,
you know what else lived in your mind for decades?
not cool. Not cool, Dan. Not cool.
SETI eels? I forget what they're actually
called. SETI eels and Tatooine lizards. Also cocktails.
The Tatooine lizard comes out. He's just...
I was glad they addressed that, because for a while there, I was like, wait, is the lizard still... Is the lizard masterminding this entire takeover of the Crime Lords?
Is this why... That lizard has no interest in bounty hunting? He is just a... He's a crime lord.
Well, I thought it might finally give us the motivation of Boba Fett. Yeah, he's being run by a lizard.
That'll
change a man.
It'll do a lot to you. It's basically in the end, he formally gets admitted and like he gets to make his Goffy stick, and he gets dressed up in the garb of the Tusken Raiders, and yeah, then they do a ritual dance around the campfire. Yeah.
He has a lovely, basically Tusken Raider bar mitzvah.
That's right.
And then they're singing and dancing and everyone's happy.
It looks like a great time.
Maybe just dancing, not a lot
of
singing.
End? Is that everything's happy now? No?
Dan, is that the end of your recap? Can I make fun of things now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Please.
I enjoyed this episode. It was not what I expected. There were things in this episode that I liked that I was looking for last week that I thought were in there, and I appreciated. I mean, I think even just like
what?
The way you saw him kind of speaking to the Pikes and holding court in front of them and like negotiating with the Pikes on behalf of the Tusken Raider, like I saw the connecting dot from that to I'm going to be a crime boss, right? Like I saw a connecting line there that I appreciated. I did have a lot of thoughts about Dan, a show that you have watched repeatedly, Arrow, and flashbacks to being on an island and wondering like how did you spend 5 years with these people? Is this show going to run for five seasons? I think the tricky thing for me is I am a little bit more invested in the present time story versus the flashback story, even though I think
the flashback story is the complete opposite.
Told well. I guess we discussed that last time. Yeah. I mean, I think they are telling that story well. I guess it's the like knowing where it ends up. And I think I have a soft spot for like crime and gangster stories. So like, I want to see what goes on with that.
That's fair. And I think I think
the present day stuff wasn't actually told that well this time. So like there's weird things that just feel like, I get that they just haven't unspooled yet, but it's like, this guy's been sent by the mayor, and then they go to the mayor, and they like it was one of those scenes which I don't know, totally takes me out of TV, where it feels like I'm watching somebody's Dungeons and Dragons adventure, where it's like, yeah, we just talk our way into the mayor, and the mayor, who's very powerful and has assassins maybe, is like right off this door, and your assassin gets shot, but we don't shoot more people, and then the assassin sends you to the bar, but actually there's not stuff happening at the bar yet, there's people outside the bar, and that's going to advance the story.
Yes.
There's some weird wandering around here for a bit, and I agree that like it's unclear to me. Like, first of all, it also still continually feels like Boba Fett is entirely in over his head. Like, he does not know. He's like making a good show of it, I feel like, but a lot of time the mayor is like, who are you?
Honor you or something. Do you think he realizes he's in over his head?
I don't think he does. What makes me worried.
I couldn't tell how we were supposed to read the mayor. Like, does the mayor, and it's, you know, they made the mayor an Ithorian, and it's speaking through a translator. But like, I was like, is the mayor messing with his head? Did he send, like, I wasn't sure how we were supposed to read that at all, and that was,
I agree.
I guess, distractingly confusing.
I completely agree.
You know, then there's these two huts here, which I like that, but it's like, but Bib Fortuna's been running it for 5 years, and you guys showed up this week.
Are we supposed to know who those huts were? Because I feel like in the first like 10 minutes, and this is like one of the reasons I don't like it as much is, I much prefer the storytelling of the flashbacks, sort of like Dan and I were talking about, like the much more like it's essentially this Tatooine Lawrence of Arabia going on.
I think they are better told. I am more interested in the story I want to be told in the present that is not being told.
I kept getting taken out because I kept making these very obtuse references of like the two twins from this and that, and there were some other ones, and like, am I supposed to remember who these are? Did I miss that TV show?
We're dropping a lot of names.
Yeah, which is fine. It's just sort of like, I've got to realize at some point that like, oh, I'm not supposed to worry about that and just let it like gloss over rather than trying to catch every name. It always takes me a second and I should decide like, what type of show is this?
It literally felt Dungeons and Dragons info dumpy where it's like, oh yeah, there's huts and there's rules about how we can interact with huts. And there's these two huts and they use the Nightwind Guild. But Fennec Shand thinks the Nightwing Guild is stupid, but they're also apparently a big deal. And there's rules about where they can operate. And even though they're paid assassins, there's a bounty on them. And it was like, there's kind of a, it was like,
and we still don't know
a lot
who
of rules
hired
that,
them, though, right?
Yes. No.
Okay.
It feels
seems
very
like
much
either the huts or the mayor, but unclear.
Yeah. It feels very much like there is like maybe two episodes of Crime Lord stuff and they've spread it out over seven different episodes. Like we've only got 10 minutes of time in each episode to talk about Crime Lord stuff.
I think it's going to be building towards something bigger, right? I actually think so. I hope so. But I think back to like, I'll say this too. Like I think I am enjoying this. I just don't know yet.
But
two episodes in, that's a tough thing to say.
It's similar to like the first few episodes of The Mandalorian of like, I'm engaged. I'm not checking my phone at the same time. Like, I'm very curious to know what happens next, but it's not like an endorphin or some sort of like
you're not
serotonin all the way of like just pure joy. It's just like, this is just really interesting.
Yeah.
Which it's like, I guess that's a win because I'll be thinking about it for a long time.
You know, when the episode started and they had the previously on and like a significant amount of the previously on was Fennec Shand like chasing the guy over the rooftop, and I was like, is that important? Is that what you thought was important in the last episode? Because I didn't think it was.
Oh, one thing
just gonna argue, I think my favorite 5 minutes of the episode is the first 5 minutes of the episode
when they do shot for shot,
not just shot for shot, but like, I mean, they're basically evoking Return of the Jedi, and then they do the, like, I like the back and forth between Fett and Shand, and I like Ming-Na Wen's like, oh, you're paying for the name, you know, like, all that is really funny, and it's good, and they kick him into the Rancor pit, and he freaks out, and then, of course, there's no Rancor, like, that entire scene is actually really well crafted, it's really well acted, I love the chemistry between Ming-Na Wen and Temuera Morrison in that scene, I need more like that, the rest of the scene, it feels like he is just kind of bumbling around a bit, like, well
and
the mayor
like,
sent it after me, let's go talk to the mayor.
That's actually the thing that I really love in the first few minutes is when I said shot by shot is like
they rebuild everything.
Return of the Jedi, like opening up the door and the two bodies walking in, and then even just moving their movable couch, for lack of a better term, to look at the grate again, was the exact same shot. Like that was the callbacks there were really fun and enjoyable. And the little mouse, like in the corner.
I like those things. I think it was when they go back into town that it felt really bumbling, because it's like you were just in town, and it's like, let us have all of the characters that appeared in episode one get brief appearances, even though it's not really clear why they need them. And like, I think he's funny, the like whatever his position is, the clerk that works for the mayor, who's like, oh, I can't let you back in there, but Boba Fett's gonna walk back in there. But it's kind of like, it's unclear to me, is Boba Fett in the same show as some of the other characters around him, right?
Are any of them good at what they're doing?
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, there's a little bit of that, like, film noir Shaggy Dog story of, like, solving a murder mystery or doing stuff and, like, weird things just keep happening and maybe you're just along for the ride. But some of it, like, and then we're going to go back to the bar because the guy told us there, but the person in the bar just says like, oh, actually go outside. It was a little bewildering. It felt like we saw the previous episode and you are reminding us
in case I was retreading.
Hit on the head between episodes or something.
There was no plot advancement other than we found out who the assassins were. We met the mayor and like twins. We introduced the Hutts.
I did want to point out a couple things. One, the Wookiee who shows up is a character from current, I think just the current comics continuity, Black Kersantan. I don't know if
neat character design.
Yeah, I mean, great looking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like very distinctive. Like as someone who's only read a few of the comics, I immediately knew who it was because he looks very excited. Very distinctive. And essentially he's a Wookiee bounty hunter / gladiator or whatever. But that's kind of fun. And I assume you drop a character that like established in other lore even in here, and like that striking on screen, I assume we will see more of them later on. That I also wanted to mention, so we had a brief another brief callback. This is a funny thing I caught while watching the credits. In the scene in the flashbacks where Boba Fett goes to steal the swoop speeders from the biker gang.
And according to Wikipedia, not an authoritative source, but actually a pretty authoritative source, that's Tashi.
I said that to Kat when we were watching. I was like, this looks like Tashi Station, because the two humans who are there are credited as Cammy and Fixer, who are characters who are
pals of Luke.
They're pals of Luke, and they're in the radio dramas, but I think they're also in scenes that are cut from A New Hope. But they are people who make fun of Luke and Luke hangs out with as a kid.
Maybe they're not pals of Luke. They're pals of Biggs Darklighter.
They're kind of bullies in the show. Like Fixer runs the power station,
I was a little confused because it's like now they're just people who live there. Because I thought they ran the power station, but maybe they don't run the bar next to the power station. Right. I don't know. Whatever. Fan service.
Years later too, right? And we never named from the name of the biker gang that currently essentially is the local gang that controls.
And is that supposed to be the same bikers that we saw?
Yeah,
they have the same signal or logo on the swoop speeders.
Okay. And Tashi Power Station conveniently walking distance from wherever the Tuscan Raiders live.
Also, for example,
everything is.
Everything's
Tatooine, it's so walkable. The zoning controls, rules are awful. Yeah. I mean,
Rick Steves loves it.
Yeah. And they don't show it, but if they pan around the other side of the camera from the Tuscan camp, there's like a Whole Foods right there.
And a Tate's. Sorry, were you going to say anything else on the things that delighted you?
We picked on the present day plot, which is only a small chunk of the episode, so we should probably talk more about the flashback, which it sounds like we generally like / is better done than the present day.
I just enjoy the characters and like them developing. I love what they do with the limitations of we can't have conversations so much in the usual way. It's going to rely on shorter conversations, lots of sign language. It's going to tell a classic story of sort of like, that's really the growth of a man or the coming of a man, but sort of like how do you create this connection between you and a new tribe that you have no connection to. And this is where Dan and I were talking, like there were also some scenes and shots that were very evocative of Lawrence of Arabia, of the outsider coming in, of representing the outsider. There were definitely some relatively strong, I took away some more Native American references to sort of how we think about
the other
Tuscan
indigenous
Raiders.
People.
That's fair.
I mentioned at the end, I mean, Temuera Morrison is part Maori, and it felt a bit like the dance ritual at the end had some at least homages to Maori culture as well.
And I think like the fact that claiming the land for this is their ancestral lands, that as well. But definitely more the Lawrence of Arabia, like what exactly is the scene you were saying, Tony, when he is speaking on behalf of the Raiders and setting the sort of the terms of the arrangement.
Working as a go-between almost,
And he respects them. He basically thinks their culture he's a reverse Captain Kirk. He thinks their culture is great. And that, you know, they aren't being given what they kind of deserve from Tatooine, or from the people that operate in Tatooine. I think it is relatively well handled despite the kind of tropey, like, I'm going to give you technology and you're going to welcome me into your tribe kind of colonizer story.
White savior thing a little bit by virtue of the fact that he's a person of color, but he's an outsider. And like,
it's weird. Like, are they going to keep the technology? And there's the question of like, do they have to change their ways in order to fight? Like, there's a lot of weird questions. We'll see if they come up with,
The choice to rehab or I don't know, remake the Tuscan people as like an interesting thing that has a culture and aren't just like scary boogeymen wandering around the desert. That's pretty interesting, right?
It is. Yeah. I'm looking forward to season two with the Jawas.
Yeah. my life among the Jawas.
But they also make a point.
Sandcrawler, lower decks.
they make a point too, which I liked, that was at the end, especially they tell him that there are many different tribes and not all of them.
And like they're a less violent one,
right,
basically.
And not just that, but like they've gone about things in different ways, right? There are some who are more confrontational with the people who are there. They mentioned they have like hidden, and some of them are hidden as well. Like, so they're not purporting to be, you know, representative of all of Tusken Raider culture.
Yeah. Not only is there a Tusken Raider culture, there is different Tusken Raider cultures. They're not just bad guys in video games now.
One thing I want to point out too, as we talk about sort of like I think it's like the story of the Tusken Raider culture. I think there's some things I want to talk about, is like the Pikes and why the Pikes are there and if we should expect the Pikes more, because that actually frankly surprised me the Pikes were there. But I also wanted to point out the I thought it was interesting of beginning to see markers for Boba Fett's story later on. So I think Dana pointed out, I'm not sure if it was on this earlier, that seeing him talk to the Pike, you could see the beginning of like almost like a proto leader. But I think there was interesting of when we go back to the scene with Fixer and what was her name again?
Cammy,
thank you. He goes to spiel the speeders, but he walks in and still beats up all the other guys. Like, and the only reason he did that is because I presume he saw them stealing the water from the moisture farm in the first episode.
And
he didn't need
to do that. Did they kill people even?
I don't think they beat them up. I don't think they kill people. But like,
they definitely saw him doing general bad stuff.
He is not stealing swoops from random people. He is stealing swoops from people he knows are bad.
And he goes in and like, he could have just stolen them and left them alone, but he goes in, teaches them a lesson. Presumably kill some of them and then leaves.
He's not acting out of pure expediency, right?
Correct.
He's not just being like, I don't want to get involved. I'm going to sneak in. I'm going to take the speeders. I'm going to drive off without them knowing.
The one thing that kind of like was like a disruptive thing that for me there is like, so you're walking distance from civilization? Like that felt like, I guess in my head, it was like he had been cut off from, you know, everybody except the Tusken Raiders for years. Mm-hmm. And it's like, nope, episode two, turns out, you know, there's people over there. I could have gone home at any time. I chose not to.
But like Thoreau in the woods, like Walden Pond's actually really close to civilization.
Yeah. Oh, when his mom brought him sandwiches.
Yes, yes. Right.
He was fine, you know.
Boba Fett's mom is bringing him sandwiches in episode three. It's fine.
I like that he gets the robes, because the outfit that he has, I mean, I think it's supposed to be kind of the jumpsuit he has under his armor. But it kind of looks like he spends the first half of the episode in pajamas.
I like that they give him and that's the same outfit that we see him wearing in The Mandalorian when he first appears.
Yes. Yep.
And we see him make the gaffy stick that he gets to use in The Mandalorian.
Yeah,
as
way
well.
More blacksmithing than I thought there would be.
But I think it's also, I think pulling our point though, right, Tony, if he could just leave at any point, he has chosen for some reason to stay. Because of that respect, and then also having
and
seen him attacked
leave.
By the Pikes, decides to at some point he's going to leave, and I think that's going to be a really interesting question of like, why does he eventually leave? Is he on a mission for them? Still working with them? I think we might see all those characters again at the end, because he's been working them all along, is my theory. But again, like, he sticks around to say, "I see you being, for no reason whatsoever, by the Pikes just taking pot shots at you." Then puts together a response to fight them
back.
Right,
and involved one too, right?
Like putting his own life at risk.
He steals speeders, he teaches them how to ride them, he basically stages this elaborate train heist that involves beating up a lot of Pikes and crashing the train. And
some of the train heist I need to like just turn my brain off for, because it's like, why are you smuggling spice via train?
Where are you going?
Spaceships, where are you going?
Yes.
Where does this go from? I mean, it seems like a large percentage of this train basically holds snipers. So it's like we're importing snipers and exporting spice, and it's a great business opportunity. I think seeing the Pikes again is interesting, because the Pikes have only appeared in live action, I think, in
Solo.
And they pop up in different animations, and it's like they
look
kind of like the Klingons in Star Trek Discovery. They look a little different each time, which is whatever. That's fine. So it was neat to see them, but it was like, where are you going? Where are you from? Well, but I'm willing to forgive a lot. Also, how many Tuscans are going to die to take this train?
Yeah, right.
But he stakes out a lot of...
But I'm willing to forgive a lot of it.
He stakes out a lot of territory.
I'm willing to forgive a lot of it for the silly droid engineer who was delightful.
And jumps out the window at the end. Yeah, yes. He stakes out a position, too, at the end where he's acting as a representative, and he asks them if they're carrying spice like from the slave spice mines, and you kind of feel like... Again, like with the bar incident, it's almost as though he's taking a moral stand at this point.
Yeah.
Like he's mm-hmm. objecting to that. And again, I don't think we have a clear view of like what is his code, right? As established in the earlier, you know, canon is basically like a if not a moral, like a merciless
apathetic
bounty hunter, right? Like he just seems to do his job and that's all he cares about is doing his job well. But it does seem, and maybe this builds a little bit more on some of the brief appearances we see from him in the animated series and Clone Wars, like stuff like that, and that he is like a person who does have some moral compass to some degree, but we don't really have a great idea of what, still, even after this episode, I think, what drives him.
Because it's been presented to us as something that already exists,
yes.
Right? We don't know. What was
not
he like
discovering
before this, right? Yeah. That's when we need the flashbacks and the flashbacks to figure that out. Mm. Yeah, that was the one thing that still doesn't rank with me. I do feel a bit that we are retconning Boba Fett's character here to make Boba Fett an interesting character, like to the previous conversation we had. And I'm okay with that.
No.
But it still fits a little weird that trying to reconcile the character before with this character.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I will say, I think the train heist scene is very well shot. It's a lot of fun. It's a great action set piece. I thought we both really enjoyed, I know, the part where the Tusken Raider who has been training Boba Fett, who actually, I believe the actor who plays it is a woman, jumps onto the train and then starts like grabbing all the pikes and throwing them off and then pops up in the little... like porthole at one point. Like it's extremely well shot. It's a very fun scene. Like it's very dynamic. There's a lot going on there. A lot to recommend the whole action angle of the set piece.
Yeah.
But yes, we still have questions about the character aspect of what exactly is going on here with Boba Fett. What did he learn? What is time? And I also will note that train piece again, we were drawing allusions to Lawrence Arabia. The train heist is like almost right out of Lawrence Arabia. Like there's a part in Lawrence Arabia where they have a train heist, and at the end he's sitting there and holding court while all of the people he has taken on the train heist are like looting the train, and it's the exact same scene. So it feels clear to me that they're sort of tipping their hat to that, as well as the scene where he then later walks out of the desert and then gets dressed up in the Tusken robes.
I like the whiny Pike guy who like is lying to him, and then like you know he spares their lives and he's complaining. And I can see under the mask of all the other Pikes, they're like, "This guy's gonna get us killed. Shut up, take the deal." And he's like, "Oh, we're gonna die without water." And it's like, "Well, you should have thought about that before you smuggled illegal spice by illegal train through Tusken Raider territory, jerk." stupid Pikes.
Yeah.
Why is your entire culture built around drug smuggling? Boba Fett season 3. We rehabilitate the Pikes.
Yep, exactly.
Boba Fett tells you about the year he spent on the Pike homeworld learning to mill spice.
That's season 2. Flashbacks.
Season 2 is Jawas. Season 3 is Pike.
Season 3 is the Pike flashbacks. Yeah. Which, like season 3 of Arrow, where he's no longer on the island, is just, it's not as good.
No.
They take too many liberties.
Yep.
Do we want to talk about? Well, we're going to talk about it. I'm not going to ask if you want to talk about. About Boba Fett's hallucinatory lizard experience.
You know, I was like, did that happen? Is there a tree on Tatooine? I guess there's a
just
tree
one.
You brought up
everybody goes to
it?
That tree to get the stick
tree?
For their sticks. Yeah,
I like the it starts with a tree and then it's like I in my head it's like. The tree is is like a Sarlacc pit upside down. And it's like, yeah, you know what? Digested, we don't know how long you were in that Sarlacc pit, but long enough that you have some pretty horrible memories from it. And it's like, yeah, it's good to remind us of that. That's not something you get over easily. It's being almost digested.
Do you think, though, so the vision itself was, okay, him in the Sarlacc pit, the remembering essentially his father's death and where he came from on Kamino, and then... him escaping from the Sarlacc pit and then obviously being attacked by the branches, like, the only metaphor I can take away from this is that the breaking the branches meant, like, breaking free of his past, and he was now sort of a new man with a new history. Like, if there was meant to be a greater meaning, yeah, that is the only meaning I can take
I
from it.
I came out feeling like the style of it and the, like, visuals were very cool, but I feel like that's also what the people directing and writing it also thought, was like, this will be really cool, but I'm not sure they had a great idea of what it meant.
Yeah. Or like the fact that, there's a lot of shots with like him and his armor.
And then without his armor.
And yeah, that is something really interesting, is like we are defining that. I think that one of the ways in that having the white uniform is very clearly defining who is the man without the armor. It's kind of feel like the subtext question that's being asked in these episodes. And the Vision kind of played on that, showing him with the armor, showing him without the armor. But again, I don't know. I feel like I've always been taught in books and movies that if there's like a vision, like it's supposed to tell you some like greater meaning about the journey the character is on.
Yeah. And the armor being cast away and then he's literally clothed in a new outfit by the end is probably supposed to mean something. So,
well, I feel like it's a place where you could have spent a little more time if that was the if that was the message you wanted us to take away. And I think it's a really I agree with you. It's a really interesting point of like, who is Boba Fett without his armor? Like, who is Boba Fett if he's not a bounty hunter, right? Like, are all these things actually intrinsic to his personality, or is there something more there? But I feel that this skirts those questions, and we haven't really delved into them, or at least pushed them to the foreground, if that is indeed the thing we're interested in talking about here. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And the question is, does the show know or care?
Yes, yeah. or want to discuss that at all. Yeah.
Or that, again, and this is where it's saying, it's like, well, I'm still enjoying it. I'm still finding it interesting. It's not...
I mean, I'm in. Yeah. Got me. They got my money. I like Boba Fett. But I will still think that there are some things where it's like, is this what you're trying to do? So
I will say I was pleasantly surprised when they first showed the lizard. My immediate first response was like, oh, this is the cute character that we're going to like have tag along and eventually make like plushies out of. And then
he's going to be like a wisecracking,
yes,
you know,
quickly disabused.
Yes.
I was like, this is Disney's plan.
I have a question.
I wondered if he was going to be able to speak Tusk. Yeah. Well,
It went back in the box.
Do they clean the lizard in between?
The lizard is sanitized.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God. Yeah.
And the wizard.
Do you think there's like that Tusken chief is just going off and doing that recreationally?
Where's the chief? He's on another lizard trip. Let me tell you. There's a lot going on.
I mean, so one thing I will say, I think we talked a lot in Mandalorian, especially season one of Mandalorian, about like where it did and didn't feel like Star Wars. I will say, I don't think I am ever like second guessing that with Boba Fett at this point. Mm. It feels, even the things I don't like about it, feel Star Wars. Mm. And I don't know. I feel like I am fully immersed in Star Wars, and it feels Star Wars in a way that, you know, feels like something they could have made in the 70s, but with much better production values than were available to them.
Yeah.
I think that part of things is working so much, I do not think about it anymore.
I actually completely agree with you. I think that's really well said.
I love that everybody still has very 70s and 80s haircuts. Like, yes. I love all the humans have, like, that guy who's, like, the receptionist at the mayor's office has, like, a crazy mustache and super long hair. And then in the Tashi Station, they've got these really, like, the poofy 70s haircuts. I love that they are so committed to that part
hair,
of the aesthetic. Sorry, space hair.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those are, I think a lot of the places where I see the fingerprints of Jon Favreau and like his love for the original trilogy is like, let's evoke this, not just in rebuilding the sets, but in invoking, like, there is no, that is of the time, because it was filmed in the 70s, it is inextricably linked to that, right? Yeah. Like, that is the style because it was the era in which it was shot. And we're not going to change that. We're not going to have this look like, you know, like the 2020s necessarily. We're going to harken back to that. And I think it's lovely for those people who are fans of the original trilogy. I think what's interesting, I'm trying to like look forward. So I believe there's only 7 episodes in this season. It's pretty short. I'm hoping the pendulum swings a little bit in the back half to emphasize more the present day story, because to our point earlier, we've seen where we've seen where he ends up in the current, you know, sort of situation of how he gets back to society, gets his armor back, etc. I feel like we're not going to cover all of that. I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess there is a little bit of a gap in between him getting the armor back from the Mandalorian and then him showing up to help the Mandalorian later on. He's got it all like polished up or something, and he's got Fennec with him, and maybe we see how he rescues Fennec. I don't know. Like, there's some question in there. But
cue the Fennec rehab physical therapy montage.
Yes, so. same. Very similar to the Tusken Raiders. It's sort of a patent approach. Mm-hmm. What I was going to say, though, is I think... So now that he has the clothes, he has the gaffy stick, we've essentially seen most of the arc of him becoming part of the Tusken Ranger culture. The only major question they have to answer now in my mind is, well, why did he leave? So my hunch is we're going to see only one, maybe two more major flashbacks. And the rest of it, I think the story, but that's probably they're going to, my hunch is they'll go back, they'll start telling the rest of the story, and then with that pivotal moment, so it's like, ah, but why is he here? What was the motivation? And we flash back to figure out what it is.
I mean, a very convenient motivation would be things don't go well for that tribe, and, you know, and
sure,
no longer has a people.
I do think they will probably do a flashback and showing him, like, we saw that brief scene where Fennec is supposedly dead in The Mandalorian and somebody, we know Boba Fett, shows up to save her. I think we'll see that because we need the explanation of why does he save her? Like, what reason does he have, really? It's not out of the goodness of his own heart, is it? Like, is... You know, we need to understand better why he decided to. Like,
I've always wanted to be a doctor.
/ cyberneticist.
Did I? Two years in the Tatooine Waste, 3 years in medical school, 1 year back in the Tatooine Waste experimenting on my first patient.
I will be sad, though, if the trope is we're basically going to kill off all of his new friends and that's his motivation.
To become a crime lord?
No. To somehow wreak revenge and like bring peace to Tatooine and like there's still some broader motivation here. It's like I will be a little
his
sad
motivation
if I go down that path
because
I think it should be more creative.
Confusing.
Yeah. And that's where it's like, that's got to, I think, tie back the greater thing of like clearly he has another motive here. But I will be a little sad if they go down the path of just killing everyone rather than like, I really hope actually all the Tusken Raiders are off, like waiting for him to send the signal and they're going to come rushing in for some grand battle.
That would be cool.
This is our city now, jerks.
Yeah.
Well, they even, Tusken Raiders mentioned there used to be a sea or an ocean.
Yes.
I was like, that's not good because you know who probably ruined the sea or the ocean? Not them, probably. Which suddenly raises
all those
not
moisture
good
farmers
about. Well, it's like, why are you guys farming for moisture on a place that doesn't have a lot of moisture? And it's like, did you guys take all the moisture? Did this place used to be great and you stole it all? We've exported all of your moisture off planet.
It's not even water. It's just moisture.
Just like, moisture. Just
the implication is there's not a lot of it.
No.
I mean, the people come in thinking we can really corner the market on moisture on Tatooine. Yep. Is that their goal? It's a bad idea.
So is smuggling spice by space train, Dan. What are you going to do?
A lot of people have bad ideas.
I think there's huge improvement here, like opportunity here for process improvement. Like, guys, efficiency is in every corner here. I found that was interesting. I wondered if we... I thought we had heard... deep cut here, right? I was, like, one of some of the old books on, like, all the geography of Star Wars. I thought there were things about Tatooine at one point being covered by oceans. I feel like we actually had known that already.
I don't remember.
I don't know what's canon anymore.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Also, I don't even know. I mean, a planet that's all desert doesn't super make sense. So I don't know. What do I know about anything?
This is the regular Star Wars, Star Trek issue is that entire planets with entire ecosystems.
Look, we don't we have the budget for one ecosystem. You're not getting two. Move on.
We can only we bought
move
sand
on to your
and
swamp
bulk,
planet.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, Kat, I was just reading an article about organized crime members in the mafia who did and didn't go to college and how a college education made them better earners, and I thought of you. So there's a lot of room for process improvements here in their organized crime endeavors. So
There's a, I forget the name of the economist, but there was a famous economist at Chicago, UChicago, when I was out there, who spent time
Oh yes,
living,
I read that book.
I think on the South Side.
Yeah, with he some studied of the economics yes, of drug yes, dealers.
Totally yeah, forget the blanking on the name of the economist. But it was some work that's come out that I remember everyone getting really excited and interested in. I'm just like, yeah, no, there's like, there is rational theory to the way we act.
Good news, guys. I just sent you a link to a article, The History of Tatooine Fully Explained. So that should really clear some stuff up.
Canon or legends?
It covers it all.
Okay, great.
It covers the whole thing. Like literally one of the first pictures is a picture of Dune. That's how far back we're going. Anyway.
So on that note.
Any last thoughts before we wrap up for this week? We got anything they want to call out? No? We're good.
That's good. I enjoyed this episode more than the first episode.
It had a little more going on. There's a little more action. There was a little more interaction with characters. The stakes went up a bit. Like, it's still kind of slow rolling out there, but it's, yeah, I feel that something is developing. And I appreciate that a 7-episode series, like, if you're doing it right, there's not a lot of excess, right? Like, yeah, everything's got to kind of be trimmed because you're telling a coherent story, hopefully, in 7 episodes. So I guess we'll see how it goes. Anyway, we will be back next week to talk about Chapter 3 of the Book of Boba Fett. And as always, we welcome your letters at acp@theincomparable.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at acp_cast. And of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts, Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
Super fun times.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week.